With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Sabrina Halvorsen.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today on the AgNet News Hour. There are some grants available from the National Young Farmers Coalition. We'll have details on how you can apply. And a study that focuses on health and management of lambs and sheep. But our top story today, looking ahead to 2024, what can we expect for the agriculture industry? John Heiberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing, says there are a few key things to watch for in the new year. The first, money flow. He says funds continue to sell the agriculture sector at a rate that's raising eyebrows.
You know, a big part of the agricultural prices and how things move in terms of price is the way the money moves in the investment accounts of managed money positions and things of that nature. And that's something that's really been kind of coming into play here, I think, in terms of the pressure in the agriculture sector as the money has been aggressively been selling the ag space overall, not just the grains, the livestock sector as well as some of the softs that are out there. And we're seeing the fund position continue to grow in this, in fact, in now we're at their shortest they've been in the ag sector in about 3.5 years in terms of their actual money flow.
Heinberg says that action is tied to a couple of different factors.
First off, in the grain sector, corn had a rough year. We're down about 30% year over year in the value of the corn price. A lot of that is also tied to the large supply picture that we're seeing here in the U.S. that's projected. We'll see how things go as we go forward. The concerns regarding demand, big factor in that as well, as the funds have pushed that corn market fairly aggressively. About 170,000, 180,000 short contracts last week. It's the largest position since realistically the COVID low back in 2020. And right now, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of need to get out of there. Another big factor, the anti-inflation mindset. We've seen inflation calm down, the action of the Fed, the loosening of the U.S. dollar. Those things all kind of come into play. And those are things that are anti in terms of commodity price at this time frame. And the money seems to be still staying on that path.
Predicting how long these positions may stay requires a crystal ball, he says.
You know, realistically, and especially in the grains, it comes down to the fundamentals and what's going to make them want to get out of that short position, whether it's on the news front. Obviously, you know, we had the Ukraine war here, you know, a couple of years ago that helped fire things up, move money into the grain sector and the concerns regarding global production. A strong weather event would be a big factor. Obviously, we got the weather going on in Brazil right now, which seems to be improving. So that's only added to the selling pressure here, you know, over the last couple of weeks. There's something like that's going to have to come into play to really make the money nervous and want to get out of these short positions, because right now the path of least resistance, at least for them, still continues to be softer.
Meanwhile, at the end of December, USDA's price report showed most farm commodity prices are below what they were a year ago. Gary Crawford has more.
USDA is out with its ag prices report covering November, and with very few exceptions, it shows farmers receiving lower prices than for November a year ago, and also paying out a little less than they did in November 22 for the things they need to do business. The November prices received index 15% lower than a year ago. The prices paid index down by 0.3%. A quick look at some commodities. Corn tumbling 27 cents from October, averaging $4.66 a bushel in November, down $1.83 from November a year ago. Soybeans gaining 30 cents from October, but averaged a dollar lower than November of 22 at $13. Wheat was weaker all around, losing 45 cents from October, averaging $6.53 a bushel, $2.62 lower than a year ago. Livestock prices also trailing a year ago, except for beef cattle. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
USDA recently joined a federal memorandum of understanding in resolving issues with rural septic systems and other decentralized wastewater units. Rod Bain reports.
1 out of 5 Americans live in an area that requires use of a septic system or other individual decentralized wastewater unit.
This is critical for health around the country, particularly in rural America. If you're living in a septic environment, that means that if something happens to your system, that can endanger the health of you, your family, and your neighbors, because you're talking about literally your front or backyard usually.
USDA Rural Development Rural Utilities Service Administrator Andrew Burke says that is the primary reason why the Agriculture Department recently signed on to a memorandum of understanding with the Environmental Protection Agency. focused on decentralized wastewater systems.
This is something that EPA has been taking the lead on for quite a while. They obviously are experienced in this area because they deal a lot with how you make sure that these kind of systems are taken care of and how you keep them properly doing their job.
As for the why USDA joined this collaborative effort,
what this memorandum of understanding does is allows us to partner with a bunch of different agencies to ensure that we're bringing all the resources of government to bear to help people across rural America.
A network of 25 federal agencies and non-federal industry stakeholders within the MOU share technical expertise, training, and innovations in addressing issues with decentralized wastewater systems, both in rural America and nationwide.
It allows us to be at the table with other people advocating for rural America and making sure that the resources that they have come to our communities, that if there are places maybe that we haven't had relationships with in the past that EPA or others know is an issue, that we can get to them, spreading this cooperation and collaboration across government.
In terms of what USDA and the Rural Utilities Service bring to this partnership,
we do have a decentralized water program that we've been running for the last few years. We've been focused on it. We have relationships throughout rural America with leaders, with communities. We understand the issues that people face. And the last piece really is this technical knowledge. Because we deal with these situations all the time, in the water side, we have technical experts who do understand not only what these situations are, but how we can partner with people in communities we deal with all the time to improve the health and safety conditions there.
More information about the EPA-led decentralized wastewater partnership and the memorandum of understanding can be found at this web address, www.epa.gov/septic/EPAs, that's EPAS-decentralized-wastewater-partnership. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet NewsHour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we will return in just a moment. You're listening to the AgNet NewsHour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. The Cattlemen's Congress is back for a fourth time at the Oklahoma City, Oklahoma Fairgrounds and is poised to once again be easily the largest beef cattle show in North America as it gets underway for its fourth show. The numbers are impressive, with just over 8,000 entries spread over 25 beef breeds, with shows happening daily now through January 11th, 15 sales featuring elite genetics that will generate several million dollars, not to mention the countless private treaty sales that exhibitors will be able to close back in the barns, according to Executive Vice President Bray Haven.
You see, the barns are full. People are here. As I talk with other show managers across the country, they're saying the same things. People show up when they enter. So I think we're going to have a significant number of cattle here. We're not declining in numbers. We are growing still, and several of our breeds are still on the rise too. And so it's really good to see all the different breeds that are here and to see them interact with the other breeds. And each breed is unique in their own way, and so they're all excited to be here too.
Haven says another aspect of the event that continues to shine is the trade show, a combination of cattle industry cutting-edge production technology and a lot of Western bling and Western wear.
So we'll have a great trade show. I saw some people walking through the barn just a second ago, and they were just here checking out the trade show and might check out some cattle while they're here. But I think that's something that we can offer just the general public or people that may be coming through Oklahoma City or coming up to visit or whatever, just stop by. It's still free admission, and we just encourage people to come check out what's going on with Cattlemen's Congress here in 2024.
When it was established in 2021, Cattlemen's Congress goal was to provide a world-class event specifically designed for cattlemen and women to gather, showcase, and market their elite cattle genetics. Educating livestock producers and insurance agents about available risk management products is the focus of USDA's Livestock Roadshow Series, a series of in-person and virtual events in 2024. Rod Bain reports.
It is a format designed to educate both producers and insurance agents about the various programs available through the Agriculture Department's Risk Management Agency. RMA Administrator Marcia Munger discusses the beginning of what is known as the Roadshow Series.
A year ago, we entered into the Roadshow concept with hosting both virtually and in-person informational meetings around the whole farm revenue protection and microfarm policies. And as a result, we got a great response, lots of positive feedback.
And that led RMA this year to develop a similar roadshow series focused specifically on livestock risk management products.
While livestock products in the last couple of years have grown exponentially in usage, there still seems to be quite a bit of areas of the country that are not as familiar. So what we plan to do with our roadshow is not just focus on one product, but a whole cadre of products around livestock, and giving the public, particularly the livestock grower, crop insurance agents, more information just to make sure that everyone is aware of all of the tools that they can have in their toolbox.
Several in-person livestock roadshow sessions are scheduled for the first quarter of 2024 across the country. The administrator, however, notes two virtual sessions scheduled for January.
So that those folks that maybe can't get to the nearest in person, that they're able to tune in virtually. There's one coming up on January 8th and January 17th.
Topics for the Livestock Roadshow include coverage of several RMA programs.
The livestock gross margin, livestock risk protection, those are for the animal units themselves. And then we have like the supporting cast of products that protect the feed, the forage that livestock uses. So we have pasture rangeland forage, annual forage. Probably the one that maybe really started all of these other livestock products, dairy revenue protection.
As well as a pilot program offered in some states called Weed Calf Risk Protection. Details on the Livestock Roadshow are available online at www.rma.usda.gov. Click the Topics tab, then go to the Livestock Roadshow link. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Looking at the 2024 U.S. red meat export potential, the forecast is mixed. Here's Chad Smith with more.
Aaron Bohr, Vice President of Economic Analysis with the U.S. Meat Export Federation, says the numbers look better for U.S. pork.
On the pork side, it's been really strong growth or even rebound in exports in 2023, about an 8% increase, and then expecting and forecasting a further increase in pork exports in 2024, possibly around another 4% gain off of the increase in 2023.
She says that when looking at global pork production, U.S. pork is well positioned for further growth.
On the supply side, in really both Europe and in China, what's happened is Europe's production has declined by about 2.8 million metric tons, or by about 12% if we look at their 2021 peak production compared to where it's going to end this year. But it lined up exactly with China's decrease in imports of pork. So they will have declined about the same, about 2.8 million tons lower than at their peak. And in 2024, talking to European producers, there was not much optimism for a rebound whatsoever. There is a chance that China's production moderates in 2024. It's hard to get excited about that at this moment. We're definitely still watching and not putting our hopes on it.
Beef has faced several challenges during 2023, and that pattern will continue in the new year.
I see 2024 as the real rationing of demand for U.S. beef, because we know production is going to decline further. And so you're looking at a domestic consumer versus our international consumers, and who's going to bid more. I hear often the perception that, well, we're producing less beef, we don't need to export as much anyway. And that couldn't be farther from the truth, especially when we need to enable higher prices across the whole supply chain to send the signal to rebuild the herd.
There are some reasons for optimism in the new year.
We could actually see a couple of tailwinds in 2024. Recently, after the Federal Reserve meeting in December, we're hearing a bit more from the markets anyway about lower interest rate expectations and some hope that we could have a bit weaker dollar, at least for commodity exports.
Chad Smith reporting.
This is the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. We will return in just a moment. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Coming up in a few moments, we'll have today's This Land of Ours report, but first, more of the day's agriculture news. And with today's AgNet West headlines, here's AgNet West Farm News Director, Brian German.
UC Riverside has secured more than $11 million to combat Wang Long Bing from the USDA's National Institute of Food and Agriculture. The first project, funded at $6.8 million, aims to breed HLB-resistant rootstocks. In collaboration with USDA, researchers are focusing on developing trees with increased tolerance to the disease by evaluating new hybrid crosses. The second project, funded with nearly $3.3 million, focuses on developing HLB-resistant scion varieties through analyzing second-generation hybrids over 10 years using Australian lime genetics as a source of disease resistance. The third project, receiving more than $1.3 million in funding, explores the use of a peptide found in Australian finger limes with known HLB resistance. Researchers are investigating ways to infuse trees with the peptide to efficiently combat bacteria that causes HLB. The USDA Agricultural Marketing Service's National Organic Program is seeking comment on proposed revisions to information collection timeframes. The data collected and maintained by AMS is the basis for evaluating certifier and operation compliance with the Organic Foods Production Act and USDA organic regulations. NOP published a notice to the Federal Register seeking to extend the previously approved information collection renewal for 3 years. The existing expiration date is March 31, 2024. The notice proposes updates to forms included in the previously approved information collection package. It also requests changes to eliminate the collection of redundant information and to account for paperwork burden estimates related to the USDA Transition to Organic Partnership Program and public use of the NOP online compliant portal. The comment period for the proposal closes on January 22nd. Last year had a lot of ups and downs for U.S. farmers. USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer said that farmers in 2023 showed just how flexible they could be.
You know, we survey farmers as to their intention, and then we come back and we survey them to what they actually did. And I think we had some movement, at least from what they signaled their initial thoughts about what they were going to do, and then what they actually did in response to the market saying, hey, can we have a little bit more of this crop or that crop? And you know, we got a big bump in corn and wheat acres, both commodities for which we thought the market needed a bit more at the time, and both commodities for which Ukraine was a big supplier into the global market. So I think if we go all the way back to the farmers thinking about their planting of the next crop, which they're doing again now, so we go back 1 year ago, I think that they showed a lot of flexibility coming into this year.
Beginning last month, USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service and Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service's National Animal Health Monitoring System have partnered to conduct a national study focusing on sheep and lamb health and management in the U.S. Conducted approximately every 10 years, the study consists of two phases involving biological sampling and two questionnaires. Dr. Natalie Urey, the 2024 study lead, emphasizes that the collected data will inform policy, identify economic impacts of sheep diseases, update extension programs, and prioritize research for the U.S. sheep industry. Producers, industry stakeholders, and policymakers will benefit from benchmark data, gaining insights into sheep health status, management practices, disease preparedness, and educational needs. Producers participating in the study can undergo free and confidential biological sampling. Grant applications are now being accepted for the 2024 Young Farmer Grant Program. For the last 4 years, the National Farmers Coalition has partnered with Chipotle to support young and beginning farmers and ranchers in starting up and growing their businesses with a flexible funding opportunity each spring. In the fifth and final year of the program, 50 grants of $5,000 each are being made available. Grant recipients also receive a one-year membership to the National Young Farmers Coalition. 45 awards will go to businesses already in operation, and 5 awards will go to farm and ranch operations starting up in 2024. The grant program is available to farmers and ranchers in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, in addition to all 50 states and Washington, D.C. The application window will remain open until January 15th. More information about the program is available at youngfarmers.org/youngfarmergrants. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
One expert says it could be more difficult for producers to turn a profit in 2024. Gary Crawford has more.
It looks like producers will need to tighten their financial belts a little bit more in 2024. This after a year that brought on a 21% drop in net cash farm income. This from USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer, who says commodity prices continue to soften going into this new year. And he told us,
for this crop that we're marketing right now, every major crop generally showing falling commodity prices in this marketing year. And I think absent some other external disruption, we're going to have challenging prices in the coming year and a challenging margins when it comes to things like break even, even for things like corn and soybeans.
And so Meyer says that in this next year,
farmers are going to have to be on their marketing game. They're going to have to be paying attention a lot more to that margin and that cost.
Especially since input prices continue to stay historically high. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Why one arm of the ag industry is bracing for a tough year. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The ag equipment market began a downward trend a year ago. Dealers say that 2024 might be their roughest year since COVID in 2020. The Dealer Business Outlook and Trends Report shows a combination of recovering inventories, high interest rates, and a general economic downturn that has dealers preparing to weather a storm in 2024. The new survey shows a significant drop in optimism in dealers' new and used whole goods revenue forecasts, while parts and service revenue forecasts hit record highs. The dealers are not facing the kinds of equipment shortages that damaged their optimism in the previous report, but the price increases remain a factor despite falling from 2022. There is some degree of optimism remaining, however, based on healthy farm financials and solid commodity prices. However, the question of how much cash farmers will bring into the new year remains in question. Revenue projections are negative as demand declines. A long-term heat wave across the nation's Gulf Coast and a tropical storm that impacted two parts of the Atlantic coast are among the top weather stories from 2023. Rod Bain has more.
Among the top weather stories for 2023, per USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey, extreme heat in the Deep South through the latter half of the year.
We did see record-setting heat stretching across the southern border, especially from Arizona to Florida. Some of the worst conditions were in the western and central Gulf Coast states, with some devastating impacts on pastures and also some significant impacts on crops.
Also of note was Tropical Storm Ophelia.
It actually brought generally beneficial rain as it moved in across the Carolinas and then dissipated within a couple of days as it moved back off the mid-Atlantic coast.
The up to 60-mile-per-hour wind gust and 4 to 8 inch rain totals were not what made Ophelia a storm of distinction.
Long after it had dissipated, some of that moisture worked its way back inland, and by September 29th, we saw extensive flooding in the New York City area.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news. Welcome back. Farah Ahmad is the USDA Undersecretary for Rural Development, and she joined me recently to chat about work in her department for rural development around the nation. There has been a lot of focus lately on rural development, especially just within the last few weeks. What are some of the exciting things that you're seeing?
Well, that's music to my ears. So some of the things that we're seeing have been some really exciting opportunities around investing in infrastructure. So there are really two things that come to mind. One is the president signed into law the bipartisan infrastructure law 2 years ago. And what that meant for USDA rural development was a huge surge in funding for high-speed internet. And we're talking high-quality, affordable internet exclusively for rural communities. And that's our job, is to make sure that we're serving rural communities and helping them create economic opportunity and thrive. And we actually just got all of that $2 billion out the door as of this last month. And what that's meant overall across the nation is over 141,000 households now being served with high-speed internet. It's meant 17,000 farms who are now being served with high-speed internet, and 600 educational facilities now being served with high-speed internet. And that makes a huge difference, whether that's a small business on Main Street or a farmer who's engaging in precision agriculture, to be able to have that internet and harness it to create economic opportunities in the place they call home.
I can tell you, I have been reporting about high-speed internet and the need for rural broadband and that kind of thing for years. And for the first few years that I was reporting on it, I was reporting on it from my home in California, which happened to be, you know, pretty much a city, not like Los Angeles or anything, but I was in a city. And then I moved to North Dakota. And my perspective on the whole situation changed completely. So I started to figure out, you know, exactly why this is so important, not just high-speed internet, but, you know, not just surf the web, but also because so many of our farm implements need, you know, if we have GPS or if you're using different, you know, just different agricultural aspects that rely on having internet access, it's become so much more important.
Do you think other eyes are opening to that like mine are? People are starting to understand a little bit more why this is such an important topic?
Absolutely. And, you know, it is the goal of the Biden administration to achieve 100% connectivity. And that's, you know, high quality, affordable internet. And to get to 100%, that means getting to the most rural and the most remote places in this nation. And it's because rural communities deserve the same quality of internet as urban and suburban communities do. And you bring up a really fantastic point that we rely on internet for so many things, whether it's the business or farm aspect, or really important things like healthcare, right? Rural hospitals, rural health clinics, they need that high-speed internet to connect to their patients. And in fact, one thing that USDA Rural Development does, in addition to helping build that high-speed internet infrastructure, is actually investing in programs like distance learning and telemedicine. And in fact, a few weeks ago, we made a lot of announcements of distance learning and telemedicine grants. I was traveling in Oregon and Washington, where I announced some there, and I met with this organization in Oregon called One Community Health. And their role historically has been to serve the farm worker community and their families, whether that's folks who are working in orchards for cherries, for apples, and to make sure that they have high quality access to healthcare. And we are providing them with a telemedicine grant to really extend that reach. So, you know, they gave me a lot of examples of, you know, folks coming into their facility or their mobile health clinic, and they might have an issue that's a little bit more difficult that needs some access to a special opinion. And so with this telemedicine grant, they'll be able to really beam into specialists in bigger cities like Portland and really get a real diagnosis that can make the difference between someone going to the ER and getting surgery and not, and saving them in really a life-threatening situation.
So many reasons why this is so important for everybody to have. Can we talk about rural jobs? And because there's been a lot going on to help increase, you know, just employment opportunities in rural areas. What are some things you're seeing there?
Absolutely. And, you know, the Biden administration believes that people deserve opportunities in the place that they call home. And so one of our focuses is how do we help communities strengthen their local and regional economy? And so we've had a really exciting opportunity as of late. So the Inflation Reduction Act was signed into law by President Biden recently. And with that came a big influx of resources to USDA Rural Development, specifically in the clean energy space. So we got over $13 billion to do that. And $2 billion of that is actually for a program called Rural Energy for America program. And that's really to help businesses and to help producers. And what it does is it gives grants so they can, their businesses can invest in energy efficiency improvements or renewable energy. So recently I was on a farm in New Jersey where they grow asparagus and they have a small processing facility on site. They got one of these Rural Energy for America grants from us and it actually covered 100% of their energy costs. So I think annually they spend about $200,000+ on energy. And now that's 100% covered because of the solar panels that they put on their farm because of this program. And that means more money that they can invest back in the farm and in the business, more money they can invest in their workers. And that ultimately means more money investing in their rural community.
Anything else that you would like for our listeners to know?
Yeah, one more thing is today is actually a National Rural Health Day, which is really exciting for us because, like I mentioned earlier, we believe that healthy communities mean strong rural communities. And so one thing that I do want to lift up as part of National Rural Health Day is that today we're announcing a partnership with the National Rural Health Association. And so we're engaging in a program with them where they are actually providing technical assistance and expertise to rural hospitals and health clinics so that they can figure out a way to improve their business operations and to figure out models that are financially sustainable for their healthcare institution. Because we know there's been a longstanding problem of rural hospitals closing. And so we're really excited about this opportunity for them to provide that expertise to rural hospitals and health clinics so they can figure out how to keep those doors open and make sure that rural communities get that primary care, that urgent care, and those critical services that they deserve.
Thank you to Farah Ahmad, the USDA Undersecretary for Rural Development. This is the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we will return in just a moment. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. I talked last week on the phone with Director of Government and Public Affairs with the Ag Business Advisory Company, Pinion, Brian Keel, and we talked about what we saw last year and what we can expect for this year. Here is that conversation.
I wanted to just kind of get like a wrap-up of 2023 and what we saw, and then maybe what we can look ahead to for 2024. As far as ag business and policy goes, what were some of the key issues that you saw in 2023?
Well, you know, there were a number of issues that came up in 2023 that affect America's farmers, and I would group those into a couple of categories. Number one, obviously, trade. We all know trade is important for America's farmers. 20% of U.S. farm revenue comes from exports. So anytime you're talking about ag policy in the United States, trade has to be one of those topics. And unfortunately, you know, there was not all bright spots on the trade front. The good news, we had record exports to China. We exported last year roughly $40 billion worth of ag trade, about 19% of our total went to China. So we sold them a lot of soybeans. We sold them a lot of other products. And that really helps bolster the ag economy in the United States and keep rural communities afloat. So that's the good news. I think the bad news is we've not really seen sufficient support from Congress or the Biden administration to diversify our export base. You know, it's good that we're selling that much product to China, but I think we're all a little nervous that, you know, if we have a war with, if China goes and invades Taiwan, or if we have another trade war with China, we're really reliant on them, 20% of our exports. So we'd like to diversify where we send food and ag products. And in order to do that, we need to open up the markets. And we really, as a country, have been behind the ball on that. So 2023, I think we'd get poor marks in terms of really expanding ag trade. One thing the Biden administration did that was great and that we support, they announced a $1.3 billion regional ag promotion program paid for out of the Commodity Credit Corporation. So they've proposed this big market development effort. We think that's fantastic and certainly can help bolster the ag economy. But we also need to open new markets with trade agreements, with tariff reductions, you know, really working government to government. And we need to see that kind of activity stepped up in 2024. So that's trade. Obviously, there were other topics that important to ag. Another topic that I would flag is spending for agriculture priorities. And there we really saw in 2023 a lot of partisanship around these issues, which is unfortunate. Agriculture has traditionally been kind of a bipartisan effort. Whether you're Democrat or Republican, you support farmers. Unfortunately, we've seen politics creeping more into the ag funding space. So the Biden administration, to their credit, pushed the Inflation Reduction Act, which put a lot of funding into ag programs. So things like Renewable Energy for America program or REAP for farmers to have renewable energy, funding for clean fuel production tax credits for our biofuels industry. Just a lot of money went out for farm programs and for tax incentives that benefit farmers. And really significant increases in those programs. So programs like EQIP that are always oversubscribed for the first time in a long time have a lot of funding and farmers are able to sign up for those programs. So that's really good. The downside is that Congress, of course, has started trying to claw some of that funding back. And so we've seen this sort of partisan fight creep up where some of the Republicans have been trying to pull that money back. They'd like to reprogram it for other ag purposes. The Democrats and the Biden administration have been saying no, they want to hold on to that funding that they passed. So that's a flashpoint that we've been watching. Another flashpoint has been around ag appropriations. Congress traditionally has worked in a bipartisan fashion on agriculture appropriations. This year, we saw the House of Representatives bring a ag bill, a USDA bill to the floor that had such dramatic cuts to USDA and the farm programs that it failed. They couldn't get the votes within the Republican caucus to support that bill. So a coalition of Democrats and farm state Republicans took that bill down and said, no, those cuts are too draconian. once again, we're hopeful that in 2024 we'll see the parties work together to really support U.S. agriculture.
It's a big hope with as divided as everything has been recently.
It is a big hope, and you know, I am mindful that when you can build a coalition of like-minded people across both sides of the aisle, you can get things done. And so to have farm state Republicans working with Democrats on these issues, I think there is a coalition that can get things done. And I would put the farm bill in that category. We'd obviously hoped that we would see a farm bill pass in 2023. Congress did not get that done, in part because they were distracted by other things. You know, government shutdown, overall government funding, the war in Ukraine, the war in Israel and the Gaza Strip. So we're hopeful that Congress will come back and pass a farm bill early in 2024. And I think there certainly is bipartisan support for doing that. Once again, there's a critical mass of Democrats and Republicans who understand farm bill is important both for farmers and for food programs, for supplemental nutritional assistance programs, for people in inner cities, and frankly, throughout rural America who depend on food assistance. So we're hopeful in 24 we'll see that farm bill get passed.
We will continue with Brian Keel right after this. We return now to my conversation with Brian Keel, Director of Government and Public Affairs with the Emphasis Advisory Company, Pinion.
You know, there's been some talk, which I think that there is just about every time we see a farm bill come around, once again, of separating out nutrition and farming, of, you know, making them two separate bills instead of keeping them together as one. In your expert opinion, what do you think of that? Is it easier to, does it remain easier to get it passed if we have those two together?
Absolutely. And I think anyone who's proposing to split those two apart just doesn't understand agriculture and the politics around getting a farm bill done. I mean, we've been able to move farm bills through Congress every 4 years because we can pull together a coalition of people who care about nutrition and a coalition of people who care about farming. They're obviously closely related topics, but it's a coalition that includes urban constituencies, you know, tend to be more Democratic and more progressive, and rural constituencies, which tend to be more Republican and more conservative. And that's the coalition that gets the votes to get these bills done. If there was an effort to split these apart, or if there's an effort to really take the meat cleaver to nutrition programs in this bill, you will not get a farm bill passed, and farmers will suffer, and frankly, America's food safety net will suffer as well.
Yeah. Let's go back to trade for a minute, if we can. Looking at the planned trade missions for coming up in 2024, they tend to focus on continuing relationships, I guess I'll say. And for some of our specialty crop listeners, there was a couple of trade missions in particular, India specifically, where there's easier or better trade. Sorry, my brain is having a hard time today.
That's okay.
they have lifted some of the tariffs and changed some things and made it easier for some of our specialty crops, especially tree nuts, to get it back into India or to be traded more freely in India. Is that helpful, do you think? And I have not seen any, I haven't seen anything come out about work on new markets or new trade deals coming. I mean, you know, you kind of mentioned it previously that the Biden administration has not been focused on creating new trade deals. Do you see anything like that coming up?
So couple responses. One on India. So I actually just came back Friday from a trip to India talking about trade issues. And there, I will give the Biden administration high marks. They really, I think, did a good deed for U.S. agriculture by getting India to roll back the tariffs they were putting on almonds, on apples, on pulse crops, a lot of things that are really important. You know, before President Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs, which started a global trade war, India was the third largest purchaser of American apples. So you think about for apple growers nationwide, super important market. Once the steel and aluminum tariffs went into place and India retaliated, our apple exports to India dropped to zero. I mean, we virtually lost that whole market. And these are markets that take decades to develop and, you know, to develop the relationships to be able to sell the product. So just catastrophic harm to certain industries. So again, kudos to the Biden administration for rolling back those, getting India to roll back those tariffs and increasing U.S. ag exports into India. You know, this last month, India officially, I guess it actually happened in April, India officially became the most populous country in the world. They have more people now than China. So when you think about where we need to be selling ag products, think about where the mouths are. You know, 1.3 billion people in China right now, they're purchasing $40 billion worth of food and ag products. That's great. India, another 1.3 billion people or slightly more, but they're not purchasing anywhere close to what China's purchasing. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement on India, and we need to really invest in that relationship and open up that market to, again, increase pulse crops, increase tree nuts, you know, increase of other products that we'd like to see go into India. Ethanol is a big one. Air quality is such an issue in India. And if we could sell ethanol into India, that would be a big improvement. So that's India. Beyond that, we really need to look at opening up new markets around the world. And, you know, there is talk of trying to move a free trade agreement with Kenya or with the United Kingdom, both of which I think we would strongly support and think, you know, anytime you can open new markets to U.S. food and ag products, that's a good thing. But we really need to look at those places with a growing middle class. So a lot of Southeast Asia, think Indonesia, think Vietnam. Those are countries where we should have free trade agreements and be selling more food and agriculture products. Really opportunities for growth for U.S. agriculture.
Thank you again to Brian Keel. That is today's top agriculture news. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Thank you for sharing your morning with us.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Brian German and Sabrina Halverson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.